기축물라가오다바깥에오르니물어가야가바깥에
You like that? Because every Filipino gets named like Maria.
Cinderella.
Maria.
Everything's Maria.
Maria Teresa. Always like three names.
But do you have the thing with the Filipinos, which is if you make a mistake of playing with something as a little child, that's what you get nicknamed for the rest of your life? Like my cousin, she's a doctor of nursing. She made the mistake when she was three of putting on a pair of boots.
Yeah.
She's been Boots.
No.
The rest of her life.
Her whole life.
Her nickname is Boots.
What's your nickname?
You know what? I got lucky because I was the youngest. They just called me Robbie.
Oh,
yeah, that was it. That's all I got.
But usually they double it up, so it's not just Boots. It's Boots Boots.
Yeah, they do double it up.
Everything's double there. Yeah.
Well, they like my mom was the baby of the family, so they called her Babe.
Yeah, Tita Babe.
Yeah, Tita Babes.
Yeah.
And they called and the kids couldn't say Tita.
Yeah.
When they're little, they say Bita. Like my daughter, she can't say Miranda. She says Miranda. Miranda, and so they call her Bita Babes, and she doesn't like to be called my grandma. She's 90. She's a great grandmother.
Is it the white side or the Filipino side?
It's the dark side.
The good side.
It's
the good side.
It's the good side.
Yeah.
It is the good side. It's it's the side that, you know, I saw a lot of homeless people under the bridge, and not one of them was Asian.
Wow. Yeah.
You don't see homeless people. You don't see homeless Asian people.
And when you do, your heart breaks. Yeah. Doesn't
when
it?
When you do, you're in Hawaii.
Yeah. Right. And you want to somehow, like talk to them and connect.
Like, dude,
happened?
How did you, what happened?
Yeah.
You're Asian, buddy. How did you?
I know.
Well, I think it's because the parents, as you know, they don't, they're not surprised that you did good. You don't get rewarded for that. It's expected.
Yeah. And also in Hawaii, you don't feel bad for homeless people because of the fact
that...
Because
they're in Hawaii.
Right.
They're in Hawaii.
But it's like, hey, can I spare some change? I go, why? Because I'm hungry. Well, there's a banana right there. Like, there's food all around them, right? Like,
there's an ocean.
Yeah, sushi's free.
That was the thing that was so surprising about the famine in Ireland was that, like... Because all they know how to do is get the potatoes. If they take the potatoes away, there's nothing for us to eat. We're going to starve. It's like, you're on a fucking island surrounded by oysters and fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Get a log and go out and, like, you know, catch something. Don't starve. They're killing us all. They've taken our potatoes. We're a hopeless lot now. No, you're not.
Yeah.
That's my dad's greatest gift.
Rob, we haven't even started. Let me just start.
Are we rolling?
We are rolling. Okay. We're going to keep all that. We're going to open that way, Rob.
We'll talk about my dad, my white dad.
I want to talk about your dad, but let me open the show the way we do it.
Oh, sorry.
And I want to, I have an old intro that I have for you.
Oh, I love it.
I like to be personable.
Yeah.
Personable.
Yeah.
And I really do just love you.
Thank you. You're
and I'd like to say, let's do the countdown real quick, but I want all that shit in.
Yeah, it's all in. It's in, Captain.
You know what I like about it? It's colloquial. Didn't seem forced. We were just talking. That's what people want. You got to give it to them. Don't hold it back.
God, he's so good. What, George? He's funnier than me? Is that what it is?
Oh, God.
No.
He is. He
Bobby,
is, George.
Nobody commits more than you.
Yeah.
Nobody.
George is the best.
I can't follow you, honestly, because I just
Rob,
go, you're
Rob,
funnier
Rob,
than
you're
me.
Acting fucking ridiculous right now.
No, you are.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
let me do the show. You and Coy, the same. You and Joe Coy, the same. Let me just say something, okay? Let me do the thing, all right? So do the countdown, friend.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the... Yeah? I do what I want.
Yeah, man.
Yeah? Welcome, Tiger Belly. I'm your captain. I'm the best. I'm your leader.
Mm-hmm.
You do what I say, okay? Don't kill. Be nice. Be nice to all. It's about energy, exchanging energy. I'm your captain, Captain Bobby Lee. Okay? We got flat face. Island dweller.
What's up?
Gilbert.
Hey, Gilbert.
Two-dimensional. Look at that face. Two-dimensional.
Beautiful.
It is a beautiful flat face, is it not?
No. He's a handsome Filipino.
All right.
He's a handsome, not just Filipino, any man.
You know.
Don't let me segment this. You got a shitload of hair, and you're going to keep it. That's the thing, you know. You know, I go like, you're going to keep that. It's going to get gray and it's still going to be cool.
Yeah.
You're going to have like waves of like, you're attractive and then the slightly less attractive. Yeah. Like, you're going to be older, slightly attractive again in your 40s. Then it's going to dip. And then your 60s, you'll have a little bit of a run. Then you'll drop dead. Or actually, you're Filipino. You'll live to be 100.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's what you hear. You know what you never hear? You know what you never hear?
Yeah.
What do I never hear?
You never hear
Tito Robbie. What do I never hear?
Whoa!
Hey.
Tito Robbie already?
He's already Tito Robbie.
Oh. The 7-foot basketball player turned 100 today. You don't hear that?
No, never.
But you know what you do hear?
What?
My Lolo, he turned 100 today. He lives on the Big Island.
No, why?
He's 100. You know he's Filipino, but he's also Portuguese.
Ah.
His name's Padrin.
And he's homeless.
And he's homeless. But he eats.
So anyway, oysters. Rob, you fuck nut. Don't do the countdown again, but let's start from where we left off.
Yeah.
Don't do the countdown again.
Okay. Same
energy. It's me then. It's up to me now. Yeah. I'll take over, I guess.
I'll pretend like I ended it.
Yeah. Good job. Welcome to the thing, right? This fat fuck, I'm sorry, my bad. This guy right here, dude, I love this guy whenever he shows up.
Yeah.
So whenever I see him, sometimes I don't even think he's real. You know,
that's true.
He's got an abominable vibe.
When you work other places, do you say, which direction is the closet? You must get that a lot, right? Because you're in a closet.
Yeah. What he said was very funny. I don't know why you're laughing.
He's so nervous.
Fucking laugh right now. Okay, what he said, this is A-list right here, dude. This is SNL shit, dude.
He's our
laugh,
intern.
Laugh
Rob.
It out.
He's our intern.
He's our intern.
All right.
You're fucking it up, dude. Laugh it up, what he just said. Say it again.
Hey, when you do other podcasts and other studio work, do you say, excuse me, guys, which way's the closet?
Yeah.
That's
what
pain.
I want every good fucking job, time. Thank you good so job. Much, Chris. That's really
you know,
nice.
It's true though, with the right delivery. You know, it's like it's stand-up delivery.
I don't know what you're doing because we're not there yet.
He's a whole set ready, man.
We're not there yet. Okay, so we also have other people in the room I'd like to introduce. We have George, my producer.
Hi, George.
And you know, we couldn't get anything done without you. I really appreciate it, all the hard work.
Awesome.
Okay, we already did that. We got my beautiful.
We already did that.
Did that, but we got my beautiful girlfriend Kalila, and
thank
then
you.
So now
Kalila,
we got
life improver.
Thank you.
Good branding.
That's a great
brand. Really great brand.
There's life coaches, and then there's life improvers.
Yeah, I know what they are, and I know the difference.
Okay, get with your intro. You're
right,
not moving
I am. I'm moving. I like moving the pace. Than what I'm doing. It's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. Now listen.
Yes, sir.
When I got into comedy, there wasn't a lot of people that you could say, you know, because there's not a lot of influencers out there. There was like, in terms of Asian stuff, you had Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
But then we had you, you know, and when I remember growing up watching you when you were young on NSL, it's such a, you know what it is that it's important because someone like you made it, you gave me a message, and the message is that you can do it. Right.
Thank
so
you.
That's how important someone like you are. That's like that whole SNL thing that happened last week.
Yeah.
Right. First of all, I don't like when people are like, well, it's the first Asian SNL. No, Rob was.
Thank you.
Right.
That's true.
Number one. First of all, there's only two people before me that did sketch. Mm-hmm. Right. Rob Schneider, who's Asian.
Yeah.
And Stephen Park.
Oh.
From In Living Color,
mm-hmm.
right? He's
right.
Korean, all right? And you guys, you did a lot, man. So,
well, thank you. It's been you know, the thing about it was like, you don't want to be treated any other way but equal and make it on your own. But a lot of times what's happened is, which is opening up now, mm-hmm. is that there was just so much of a direction to just have like the white Anglo guy and that was the only thing. And nobody else could be the head of a picture star in a movie or a TV series or something like that unless it was, you know, very infrequently. Like it was like a gimme. And now the floodgates are open now. But I, going back to like that last week, which what happened was like, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, a couple of weeks
ago. You were great. You were hilarious on David's thing. You were so funny.
I don't know.
But the truth of the matter, though, was because we wanted to get Bobby Lee's impression of what there was, and you were nice enough to call us on your toilet, which was He was on the toilet.
I didn't. Well, he was in the toilet, but
it
looked like
a yoga mat.
It was a yoga mat. Thank you.
Oh, that was
he was
good.
Very naked.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very good.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was good. But I did think, like, you know, when that guy, you don't even need to go into his
name.
But when that happened, it's like my thought was this: is I really feel like I've been been hit by the wave of social media, Twitter frenzy, and I just think, like, hey, it's not up to the horde to decide. Mm-hmm. I think I think if somebody is truly a racist, it'll work its way out, and then that guy won't last. This guy's a horrendous racist that won't last. But the idea that just because you're holding a microphone, just for doing you're doing a podcast, means that it's okay to just hey, I can say whatever I want. I can be racist, or I can say demeaning, degrading things. That's not okay either. So it's in that way I feel like torn. How did you feel? Because you said on the air. Fire, you know, it's about time somebody gets fired for
That's not what he said on here, though.
But then when you thought about it, you thought about it later that night or the next day when we talked, and you said, you know what, that's how generous you are, but also, like, you don't want anybody to get fired, mm-hmm. or, like this thing should work its way out. I think you can have, like, a learning moment. I just remember, like, this is a weird leap, but I'm going to make it. There was a guy that the last guard, he wasn't even a guard, he was, like, the accountant at Auschwitz.
Stop.
Whoa, that was a big...
Whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, stop. Because I didn't know. Now we time traveled, and now I got to get my mind reworked.
Got to prepare.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. So
listen to it, though.
We went back to... Oh, no, I'm going to listen to it. But can I just give me a second?
Let him adjust.
Different time period.
Okay,
the 1940s, what is this?
Well, this is like the guy who is the... Yeah,
okay, 40s. There we go. Okay, go ahead.
1940s, Auschwitz. He's an accountant. Now, none of the guards... Who were ever so basically what happened was there was this human rights thing where, like, unless you were if you weren't directly involved in the murder of people, then they couldn't go after you. Mm-hmm. And so they changed it, like, if you were, like, helping or assisting to it, then they could. And so basically they changed that, and which they should have done. So there was, like, this happened a few years back where the guy was 94 years old and he went to a trial. He's one of the last people left, and they did convict him. I mean, he died like an hour later. but the point of the point of the matter is, like, they were going to put him behind bars or whatever. I said that would not have been as helpful as make him go to some schools while he's still alive.
Yeah.
Make him talk about the situation.
Yeah.
He admitted it.
Yeah.
He knew what was happening. He knew what was happening and was assisting in the happening of that. So I do think, like, instead of just, I don't know why, I'm a liberal, which is like a 70s off the charts liberal, which is, makes me an arch conservative now. Mm-hmm. In other words, who isn't for equal rights? Who isn't for gay rights? Who isn't for, you know, I mean, everybody, and you should treat everybody equal and for women's rights, equal pay. I'm all for that. But now it's like there's a neoliberal thing, which is like, that's not far enough. We want to be treated, we don't want to be treated the same. Yeah. We want to be treated better. And that seems to me a weird kind of way to get your head around it, where there is no allowance. We'll destroy you.
Yeah.
We'll cancel you. We will. And I think hopefully it's hitting, it's like anything, it's hitting its apex and it'll come back down.
But I think people are starting to sort of lean towards what you're saying, though. Where it's if you know, like, the allowance of just having a learning moment. For the past 2 years, no one's been allowed a learning moment. It's canceled immediately.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
One strike and you're out.
Yeah, it's just one strike and you're gone.
All right, but comics have been driven out of comedy clubs. Right, because now we're scared about saying certain things, right? So then we created podcasts so we can express those things and be free and loose.
I like it.
And exercise our rights.
Yes, but right? I do think you have to never forget you're up there to entertain. Some of the things, the other things too, is like some of the people who are also asking to, you know, silence and asking for political correctness in the sphere as if comedy is only supposed to be this great universal learning and lifting process. We're there to entertain, you know, and that has to be, you can entertain in a myriad of ways. You can entertain in a beautiful way with by enlightening of some universal truths, or you can just be really silly. And to me, what made me laugh when we're little kids, and I know you got to be the same way, is the silly shit.
Yeah, I
the
love
the silly stuff.
Shit.
That's the greatest. I mean, like, you need Peter Sellers and, does your dog bite?
Yeah.
Nope. I thought you said your dog did not bite. Yeah. Yes, but that is not my dog. You know, it's stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, when I saw Return of the Pink Panther, yeah. You know, when I was a little kid, I say, can I have your hat? Your, can I have your gloves, sir? Your jacket? Can I have your keys, sir? And you see that you think he's valet, and he's just actually just taking the guy's stuff and driving. And it's like, it's the greatest. Yeah. I mean, that's the silliest.
Yeah.
And the silliest was king.
Yeah.
And so, in a weird way, like, and then you kind of grow up, and like Cheech and Chong's like, Dave. Dave's not here. Dave, no, man. I'm talking Dave. Dave, I'm Dave. Dave's not here. No, dude, I'm Dave. You know, the silliest stuff.
Right.
And then I guess you kind of progress a little bit, but I don't know if it's progressing or
you're
just
a
shifting.
Comedy connoisseur.
You have to be, I guess.
You do.
Because
all the
on.
Things that you're saying, like I was wearing a Strange Brew t-shirt the other day,
yeah.
And you're trying to explain to people, kids, what it is. You just can't really can. They don't get it. They don't know what it is, right? And you forget that there's this whole history behind us. And a lot of comics aren't historians. They'll go to a comedy club and you'll go, hey, look, Kipadada's on the wall. Like, they don't know who he is. Right?
No.
Right? And it's kind of a sad.
Well, we know.
Like, I know.
Make me laugh.
I know.
And like
I
that know. Guy was a really funny club act.
He was a legend.
Oh, yeah. Great jokes. Great stand up. Tied it all together.
He died.
I didn't know he had passed away.
A month ago.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kip. I got to talk to him a couple times.
Yeah, me too.
I got to see him, you know.
Yeah. He was signing up 2 years ago at open mic at the Comedy Store.
Oh.
And one of the door guys goes, you know this old man? Go, that's fucking Kipadada, you fucking piece of shit. Well, he wants to get up. He's a paid regular.
Wow.
He is? I go, yeah. And they put him up. And he did good, right?
Yeah.
But they don't know. And that's sad. Yeah. I love comedy. So, you know, when I bust out, yeah. Oh, you and Margaret, I know more, you know, I mean, that's...
Well, there's a history to it, you're right.
Right.
And there's also, like, you know, the thing about stand-up, which is so unique, is that it really is truly like an American art form, like jazz, like rock and roll. It emanates, but it has a certain attraction to it in its ability to say something to whether it's youth or a generation, and now it's beyond that. Whereas, and it goes worldwide. So now you have stand-up in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have it in a version of it that's safe or that you can't get killed in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
But seriously, and it is. And it's still relatively young if you think of any art form. You know, if you think of like, whether it's, you know, not to get too off the beat here and too elitist, but like if you look at like pointillism and expressionism and post-expressionism and impressionism, you're looking at an era of like, well, there's 1880s, 1890s and moving up. Mm-hmm. And so you look at jazz, you look at like, where did stand-up start? Maybe it was Mark Twain who charged a dollar to go around in early 20th century, charged a dollar to show up at like a public... like a library or a union hall, but you know, and say like, hey, I'll give you give a dollar and you come hear his stories about going to Hawaii, which is easy for us. Imagine how hard it was, you know, 100 years ago to have to go to Hawaii. You have to take a marine liner or whatever, you know, and take a merchant marine vessel and get out there. And so he would tell these stories and they were jokes and they led to something. Then kind of vaudeville kind of got in there. But if you think about like stand up and how we do it now, you're thinking of it from like post 50s.
Yeah.
Early 60s.
The young sport is what you're saying.
Yeah. And like the only one guy left is Mort Saul.
Right.
You should probably have him.
I love him.
Mort Saul, he ran for president, I think, in 1960.
I know Mort Saul.
He ran
I love
for
him.
President?
Yeah. Mort Saul, or at least he advertised himself Mort Saul for president.
And so did Ben Glebe, so let's not get out of the way.
Oh, Ben Glebe's running too?
Yeah. Ben, you know that Ben Glebe's running, right? For president? Yeah, yeah.
Good. Fingers crossed.
There's no way.
But anyway, so you take a look at that. The stuff that turned me on when I was a kid was English humor, because like Peter Sellers and Monty Python.
Oh, my, amazing.
I mean, like, it was like PBS. I mean, I didn't even know what it was, but it, like, my brother was just started playing this stuff. And when it was like, it was not playing it. He was like, he would show it to me. And it was usually during the, they were selling PBS to try to join to donate money. And they would say, and 10 more minutes, more Monty Python. And I go, what is Monty Python? And these guys were just screamingly funny and screamingly silly.
Yeah.
Where you would cry laughing. I mean, literally just falling down laughing. And that was the stuff that was like my hero. And then, you know, the silliness, which is like what led to like you know, the guy that, you know, probably influenced us a lot was Steve Martin when we were little kids.
Oh, my God.
Because Steve Martin was silly. And this is after an era of, like, when everybody in America, post-Vietnam, everyone was so serious. And, like, there was Watergate, and then president resigned. And people just wanted to be silly. And here you had this guy who was just ready, and America was ready for him to be, like, the silly jokes. And some of his jokes are like, you know what I like to do when I go to a party? I like to arrive a little early and throw all the food on the floor. That's what I did at the last party I went to about 8 years ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, just very silly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just, but like, they were ready for it, you know?
You know what I noticed about you and Spade, especially because I know you guys, I guess, the most out of that class, is you guys don't get scared. Like, when I, like, if I do things with David, like I did that movie with him that you were into, the Miss...
Oh, yeah, Missy.
Missy, right?
Yeah, Missy, yeah.
Yeah, and I worked up with him then, and I did a pilot presentation with him for his show now, and so he just doesn't get... Do you get scared?
What do you mean?
Like nervous, like if you're in a movie,
well, you know,
or
the good thing
doing
about
live, anything.
Anything Asian is so true, because, like, it's so true. It's like, this is a kind of a weird off-the-beat story, but, like, true, like, I find for my Asian heritage and all my relatives, when they're nervous, what do?
I don't know.
They laugh.
They do laugh, yeah.
Oh. It's like, uh-huh. When they don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that is a beautiful way of making the other person comfortable. But it's really, it is like, it's a heritage thing. It really is like a gift of, like, if you're nervous, why make the other person nervous? And so if they kind of laugh, I'm like, uh-huh. It's generous, yeah. You know? Don't you find it to be? But here's the weird thing. I like, this is a weird, but like,
I love it.
That's what led to, like, there's this guy named Dr. M. Scott Peck. Dr. M. Scott Peck was the guy who was the first real self-help book called The Road Less Traveled.
That was what that is.
That was on the bestseller list.
Peck, you said?
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. M. Scott Peck. So this guy, so what this led to, what was interesting was, like, there was this thing that in 1968 he was assigned to be in this a government, the American military, the U.S. Army assigned him to do this psychological analysis of the massacre at My Lai, which mm-hmm. the massacre at My Lai, which is these troops, these, you know, company bakers.
What was My Lai?
Vietnam War.
Okay.
Where these guys, you know, American troops came into this village and they just wiped out every, and they were unarmed and just killed, like, the villagers.
Not the babies.
Everybody.
Not the
everybody.
Not the babies.
The babies.
The babies. They killed the babies.
Everybody was killed in this town. They just started firing.
Yeah.
And so they hired Dr. Peck to do this psychological analysis, and he went to the, you know, and he, you know, what happened was, first of all, it wasn't even reported until a year later.
Damn.
So by the helicopter pilot who witnessed it, and finally just his guilt couldn't deal with it anymore. So then he reported, and then they hired him to do this psychological analysis. And they went, not to go too deep into that, but the psychological analysis was basically this company B, you know, the Vietnam, you know, the guerrillas who they were avoiding and just, you know, shooting them, you know, sniping and whatever, and then going back in the tunnels, and they didn't even know about the tunnels at the time. So these guys were really frustrated, really angry, and a lot of these guys weren't the cream of the crop of the American military. These are grunts and whatever, and they just lost their shit at this one particular place. But what set it off was the fact when they got into the village, and they were looking for a sniper, somebody shot them. They went into the village, and they lined up these villagers, and the villagers started laughing at them.
So
that out of crazy nervousness,
because
the nervousness for their lives, they were laughing. And that was what led to that massacre. So going back to that,
let me ask you this question real quick.
Do I read?
If you and I were,
that it's useless?
If you and I were there, we're in the same platoon. We're American soldiers, and I go haywire, I go off. You know what I mean? Like Uzis into like fetuses.
Oh my Lord.
Just go crazy. I don't know if that's possible.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically,
well, we know the average age of the guy there was 19, so.
But there we go. You know what I mean? But let's say I go crazy, and then 3 years later I get court-martialed. Would you testify against me?
I would testify the truth, but
no,
I would say...
What?
I would say...
Wait. No, it's not funny. I don't know what you're doing.
Making you feel comfortable.
No, Rob. There's only one way this goes.
Okay.
I don't know why you're laughing, and this is really fucking fucking.
See, I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous right now, man. I'm going to just say something. Okay, move this fucking fire. Okay, I'm going to ask you again, man. Will you testify against me?
Never.
Thank you.
Okay.
and it feels great. Never.
Does
we
feel
can move on,
we can,
right?
We can.
Don't say shit like that again. I love you, man. But fuck, right? Would you testify against me?
I would. You know why? What? I think that you would live a miserable life as a free man if you had any conscience at all. I think that down the road you'd feel
get
better
over.
About
he's a stand-up.
He's right, and he has really short-term memory.
Yeah, but he'd say, you know what? Yeah, I feel bad, but also I got to live for me now. I can't worry about all those people. I can't help them anymore. I feel bad, but now I'm gonna feel worse if I don't live my life to the fullest.
You're right.
You find a way to rationalize.
Yeah.
What it really is a when you have like the thing about like I don't hear other stand-ups talking about like was like you hear like it comes at a psychic price. Remember the first time when you risked everything? You don't want with a real stand-ups when they're really doing you don't want to know anyone there because the potential for humiliation, it's important to kind of like melt that ego away. I remember bombing when I first started for the first like year and a half.
Yeah.
To where like the physical I said, I just curiously, like I want to remember the physical manifestations of what I'm feeling right now. Just utter humiliation and like you know, just bombing. I swear to God, it felt like my ears were melting off my head.
Yeah.
Just that kind of humiliation, like, whoa.
When was the last time you felt that?
My wife recently taught. No, I'm just kidding. I never felt that. You know what I did, though? Seriously, and then, like, all comedians that kind of do that, too. They say, okay, after that happened, I said, I'm not going to let any audience destroy me. I'll let them bother me. And just, you know, you kind of like, you know, I said, I'm going to let them bother me till here, but not below that.
Yeah.
Mm. In other words, I'll give them 40%. Yeah. To humiliate me, but I'm not gonna give. And sometimes you have a bad night.
I would get so nervous in the beginning that I would force myself, go no matter what happens, you have to commit to this one physical thing in it.
Yeah.
In this bit, I don't care if you flub the words. I want you to commit through this physical. I had a bit about LSD, how you think you're normal.
Yeah.
You think you're walking like this, right?
Yeah.
But you're really walking like this. Yeah. Right is the bit, right?
But you got to commit.
I had to commit to it.
Otherwise,
right?
It doesn't work.
So I would go like this. I would go. So you think you're walking like this, right? And I would just do a normal walk across the street, and then And I would do this crazy walk, right?
And it works.
But it didn't the first time.
Oh, because you didn't commit.
Because I did kind of commit, but in my head I'm like, you have to commit more. It's got to go crazy, and then you learn to do it.
But isn't it interesting that your instinct was not failure or not like this isn't working, but I can get it to work. This isn't working now, but I can get it to work this way. That's a great instinct. That's survival instinct. And that comes at a risk too, like, whoa, you know? It's jumping out of a plane scary.
Down?
It's a jumping out of the plane scary.
Yeah.
You know what sucks about stand-up is you cannot get around the failing part of it.
Oh, yeah, still.
You still cannot. So it's like, that's why it's the worst job ever, because no matter how big you are.
Yeah, Jerry says, you know, they'll go and see, like, my daughter's a singer, and they'll go and see her songs and whatever. And I said, you made the right choice. Because, like, Jerry Seinfeld says, you know what, as you're a comedian, I don't care how famous you are. You get 2-3 minutes max, then you got to be funny. And you got to stay funny. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't care how funny, how famous you are. And he's right. And nobody wants to hear the same jokes that you said 2 years ago, whatever.
Can I ask you about that, your daughter? Is that a personal?
Yeah,
sure. Because honestly, we were watching, what were we watching? Something on TV.
American Idol.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
She coached the winner.
Yeah, she coached.
She did. Whoa. Your daughter came on, right?
Yeah.
And she was good, but I didn't know she was your daughter.
Yeah.
And then she goes, that's Rob's daughter. I go, Rob who?
Rob
Schneider, I go, shut up.
Yeah, that's my kid.
And I go, and then I Googled it, and I apologized to her. And you know everything. Sorry, baby.
Yeah, I don't.
I love you. So look at her.
You know what?
Skin.
You know
so
what's funny? That's a male machismo thing, because I doubt my wife all the time. And I stop doing it. I mean, I do it in my head, but I don't tell her.
Yeah.
Because, like, why? It's just a thing, like, I need to fix it. I know how to get there, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think it's, like, a disrespect. Personally, I just think it's like a guy thing. I think it slowly changes.
Yeah.
As you get older, this is a weird thing. My wife thinks there's such a thing called andropause. What do they call it? Andropause or, you know, angiopause. Andropause. Yeah. Angiopause. What the hell do they call it?
You're saying stuff.
I've never heard
my pay grade.
Before,
no, it's
so
like no. Basically, it's basically guys going through the menopause.
Oh, andropause.
Andropause.
Yeah.
This guy about like a guy.
Testosterone goes down.
No, but not just that. But like you know, No, but like there is no pause. There it's like men, no more. Andropause, no more. I don't believe it. But she thinks like, no, it's a diminishing kind of. My wife's convinced of that. But it's, I don't believe it. But at the same time, there are some manifestations of it that are physical manifestations that you can say are maybe is what she's talking about. Is this, is the hemispheres in the brain that separate the left side of the brain, the right side of the brain, kind of dissolve a little bit. So you become more in touch emotionally as you become in your 40s and on, more available, more sympathetic, more empathetic. That's why it's interesting to know that, like, the people, like, you don't have it at all when you're a teenager. That's why, like, the Khmer Rouge, they wanted to get people to kill other people. Who did they hire? 15-year-olds. 16-year-olds. Because they'll do what you tell them to do. I need you to go over there.
Wait, wait. 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds are more susceptible to directions?
Because they have
evil directions?
They're more testosterone.
To manipulate.
To manipulate and to do what you're
doing. Pol Pot did that.
Without thinking. Pol Pot, right, exactly.
So Pol Pot is a manipulator in that way.
Yeah. Well, yes. But like to get, you know, if you want people to do bad shit, you know, it's like, that's why they want 18 and 19-year-olds to join the army. Because if you ask me, like, hey, we need you to climb the hill and go kill those people, you're going to go, what?
Who are they?
Yeah, who are they? What do they have against us? And can we talk about this? Is there another way? That's why they get 18, 19-year-olds to do it.
If you and I were in the Khmer Rouge.
Okay. Get ready, Rob. Get ready.
Let me finish.
They'd let us live.
No, you and our soldiers in this scenario,
fucker. You're Pol Pot soldiers?
Yeah, we're Pol Pot soldiers.
But you're 17, 18.
17, 18, we say.
We're 17, 18-year-old Pol Pot soldiers, right?
So we're stand-ups.
Right. And Pol's
we're
like,
looking for open mics.
Do we call him Pol? I don't know. What do you call him, Mr. Pot, or do you call him Pol?
PP.
Or PP. What's up, PP? What do you do? Anyway, we'll call him Mr. P.
Or Prime Minister.
Yeah, okay, so
Mr. P is like, hey, you know, I don't know what it sounds like. This is like an East Coast guy. But like, hey, you guys, you know, this is the one that you're going to, you know, interrogate, right?
Yeah.
And then I interrogate, and I take a Swiss Army knife and start gouging the eyes out, start fucking to the side, and I go crazy. And then like we go back to Pot.
Yeah.
What would you say to him? What I did?
He did what you wanted, and I don't know if you really wanted that. I would say the Pol Pot.
That's better than what before. Remember before they would have ratted me out. Remember?
Testify against the truth.
You're learning.
Listen, he did exactly what you said.
There we go. Let me thank you, Rob.
You know the thing about though is like. Which is true, but like, you know, if you're in your 40s, whatever, you're going to think about things a little bit more, and like they don't really, I mean, like the problem is Howard Zinn would say about society isn't civil disobedience, it's civil obedience. Everybody doing what they're told, and that's the problem we have in America right there. No, people need to stand up and you know, say, you know, we have a moral duty to disobey laws that are unjust.
I have a little question I want to ask you.
Martin Luther King.
I wasn't going to ask you this, but I'm going to ask you.
Here it comes. Oh, shit. I knew it.
And we'll cut it out if you don't want to answer it. But
when I was you should say that every question.
Yeah, I'm going to do that every question. But when I was doing that movie with Spade, you weren't in it at first. Right? You weren't at it because I asked, who's in it? They rattled it off.
Yeah.
50 names. I was there with a lot of them, like Lauren and, you know, Witowski.
Who's
you know,
great?
Love Lauren.
Witowski?
Witowski is great.
What a classic guy.
What a great
that
guy.
That guy should be on SNL. They need a guy like that.
He almost had it.
That guy is like made for that show.
I know.
Funny, tall. I mean, that's a guy in any era, they need a guy like
that.
He's
like that. A Chevy Chasey kind of
exactly.
A guy.
Exactly. Yeah, he can play a fireman, a policeman. He can play a normal guy, a dad.
He auditioned three times, Rob.
More than that.
Met with Lauren.
Met with Lauren, went and read, you know, he auditioned for Josh Myers, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, Seth Myers, I mean. Mm-hmm.
That's why, if he would have had a better manager, he would have gotten in there.
His manager's the best.
Really? Okay. If he had a worse manager, he would have gotten in.
His manager is, you know, Odenkirk's wife.
Mm. Yeah.
That's her.
Yeah.
So he's in cahoots with some good people.
I know. If he was with Brillstein, he'd be on there.
You think so?
I think so, because Brillstein was like the guy. David Spade, and David Spade never talked about this in his book, because he called me up one time and he says like, hey, buddy, I'm going to do this book. You mind if I say some shit about you? And I said, sell your book. What if I can make you some money? Go for it, pal. Say whatever you want. And I said, just don't forget that when they hired you at SNL, they hired you. Why? And they said, and this is true. And I said, I'm going to put this in my book when you don't.
Yeah.
And here it comes. It's coming right now. And you could ask me to cut, if you want me to cut this out.
Do you want to cut this out?
No. I insist you keep it in.
I want to keep it in.
David Spade only got hired on SNL because Bernie Brillstein told Lorne Michaels, you got to, because they only wanted to hire me. So you hire Rob Schneider. And they said, well, you got to hire David Spade too, because they're a comedy team. They write as a team.
Oh.
Wow. That's the only reason they got hired. Because he's auditioned. They didn't hire him from that.
Wow. So did you,
got hired.
How did you meet David then?
Well, because we were best buddies as soon as we met. I mean, when you see David Spade, David Spade's one of those guys. And I say this, he's as funny in any era. You drop him in the Middle Ages, hey buddy, this guy looks like he's going to infect us or something, you know. Is that Iran over there? You know, we're going to, you know, hey man.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, anywhere, any, he can like, he's comfortable in any social group, whatever. And he's you're guaranteed to get five laughs every time you're with him. You know, it's one of those
kind
of guys.
It's his stories too. And even when he gets emotional.
I never seen that.
No, he told me a story when he found about Farrelly. He was on that other show. What sitcom he was on? Yeah. Just shoot me.
He couldn't even come to the funeral. And I understand why. I didn't understand then. I understand why now.
Did you go to the Farrelly's funeral?
Yeah.
Wow. That must have been.
Well, you know, it's a thing like, it's just like literally like my father dying and like Farrelly dying were the most absolute. I mean, you kind of saw it. The last time I could have seen him was at a party, but I didn't want to go because I knew he was drinking at that time. And I didn't want to be there because condoning his addiction. So I said, I'm not going to go because I don't want to be one of those guys who's like, you know, hey, slap happy when I know he shouldn't be drinking, you know. And like, but at the same time, it's like, oh, I wish I would have went that last time. But so going back to like David's also one of those guys, like, you know, when it was, I met an acting class and there was all these good looking girls and everything. And like, and it was recommended from Gary Shandling recommended this guy, Roy London, to go to this class. And like, of course. Then David Spade was there, and it was a great class. Elizabeth Shue was taking the class, and like Brad Pitt was at the time also in the class, and like Sharon Stone had taken the class, and Jeff Goldblum was coming out of that class. So we meet some badass dudes in there.
Where's this class? I need to go to this class.
He's passed away now. Ivana Chubbuck took over the school. She's awesome.
Where is she?
Excellent
I need
teacher. She's right down the street.
I love
it. From her.
I'll take it.
And so I met David, and like David was like, you know,
he must have been, when you saw him, you must have been like, is he 12?
I know.
Right?
He was a young guy, but he was like, and also you can tell just, you know, a stand-up, still trying to figure out his voice and finding himself and stuff. But he had already been in a movie. And you know, when you first get to L.A.,
Gleaming?
And you like, you know somebody who's like in a movie and like that you're talking to?
Yeah.
And like, and it's a stand-up and go, how did you do it? How did you get in a movie?
Yeah,
a movie?
Yeah.
How did you get a movie?
yeah.
You know what I mean? You remember how amazing that was?
Yeah. I'm still like that with people.
But seriously, it is like, you know, it's just, it's unbelievable. And how did you do it? And then like, how do I do it? Because if you can do it, then like, it's one of those things. Sardi. Wow. And then I remember it was like the young comedians at that time was like me and then David and then Adam Sandler moved here. And like Adam Sandler and I lived right across the street from Houston Street.
No, really?
Yeah.
So you guys knew each other all before SNL.
Wow.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when the L's mom threw all my stuff out of the apartment window. And I drove home, and I like my homeless people were picking through my clothes, and I said, "Shit, that looks familiar. I have the same fucking Eisenhower jacket. I wear the same one on David Letterman." And then I realized, "Holy shit, that is my jacket." And anyway, so then I got kicked out of the house for a while, and I went over and slept in Adam Sandler's place, 'cause it's right across the street.
Wow!
And he didn't even have an extra pillow, an extra.
What was it, empty?
He had like, no, he didn't have an extra on his couch. He didn't have like, it wasn't.
What does Adam Sandler's couch look like? This is going to be in
first
now.
First of all,
it's early 90s, late 80s.
Late 80s. I would tell you like, it's interesting you talk about the couch because I remember because we both got into Saturday Night Live, we were making nothing. It's literally like $750 bucks a week, you know?
Wow.
And
it's what?
Like, yeah. To be a writer there, beginning writer.
Wow.
And so I think it was like, it ended up being $1,500 like for the month or something because there's only two shows a month. So it's really low. So, because it's late night too. And I remember like when we got hired and like, because after the first year, he became like a regular, like, or not a regular, but a feature player.
Yeah.
We're both a feature player.
Yeah.
And I went to his apartment and it was like right across the street from McDonald's, which I thought was like, you know, that's pretty cool. And then he had a new couch. And I still remember it was like blue and striped. And I'm like, I mean, like a new couch. And I've been a stand up for like, you know, 8 years by that time.
Yeah.
And I, or 6 years or 7 years, or maybe it was 8 years. And like, I'd never bought a new couch before. So this guy's got a couch. And I'm like, is this guy got more money than me? Where's his couch? And we're like, I'm thinking like, holy shit, he's making it. He's got a couch.
Yeah.
And I remember the coolest thing was like the going there and like, and I'd always admired his blue and white couch. And then he would say, you know, after he hit hard, he hit really hard. He did like the Hanukkah song.
Right.
And he said, hey, you got to come over and hear this, buddy. And he brought me over and it's like, hey, buddy, listen to this. And it was his answering machine. And he said, Sandman, it's Steven Spielberg. Just want to tell you, that was a winner. Wow. Killed me.
Wow.
And then like, he goes, beep. Sandman, it's Hanks. That was a good one, buddy.
Wow.
And I went like, holy shit.
Jeez.
This guy's going to be fucking huge.
Yeah.
And I went like, geez. So it was like, those are the memories that I really remember. Like he was, you know, that he shared with me because we had a shared dressing room. We were buddies before and like, it was cool.
Oh, man. You know what I love about him, too? His loyalty.
This is unbelievable.
Toward you.
Oh, yeah.
No, he has such loyalty.
He's been a... When I went
toward
to my,
you.
Yeah.
And fucking David. Let me say something. I've auditioned for every single Adam Sandler movie. No, fuck you. Fuck
Dude,
you.
Let me just
fuck
tell
you
this.
Fuck you. No, ever
no, no, no.
made.
Let me just tell you.
I new can't one get in doing. Because you're in.
I know.
You're the guy.
I got bad news for you and great news for you.
What?
Is that the new one we're doing, you're in. We've already talked about you. I'm just telling you right now.
Wait. Adam Sandler did.
You are in the new
Did
movie.
Sandler say something?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's all I need to know.
Wow! Do you want us to cut
to
out?
A year from now, right? I'm going to be in a fucking Chinese Listen. Rice hat. My lines are...
I got to tell you... It's I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah, what is it?
Joe Coy and I are doing a movie, and he's producing.
It really? You and Joe are doing a movie.
And he's producing.
Adam's producing, and that's the one I'm going to be in.
Yeah.
If I'm not in that, I'm going to
tell you
something.
Right now.
He will be heartbroken. He will be heartbroken.
I will give you that car down there.
sorry, happy, but he's so
sorry, baby. I got so angry that I couldn't walk.
I just
sorry, baby.
Sorry. You walk like this.
No, I just. But I want you to do. I want you to help with the role. Figure it out because I've
we
got
both,
like.
We'll figure it
I'm
out.
I'm telling you, it's yeah. it's been a lot of. I'm having fun writing it.
Yeah.
And Joe is so funny because he's calling me. You know, Joe's having like the ride of a that you know maybe a. 24 comedians get in the history of the world right now.
Yeah.
Where he's selling out like stadiums.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He calls me from like, dude, I've got 25,000 people in Hawaii want to say hi to you. And he's got on the phone. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
So anyway, and it's going to be fun. We're just going to play, you know, a couple of cops in a movie. And it's been really fun writing.
Robbie,
I can't wait for him to take over.
I got another thing for you.
Yes.
We should do this.
What?
Aside from that even, because you know that me and Joe... We signed a thing with Howie Mandel. We're working with Howie Mandel on
yeah.
something, right? But listen to me.
With Howie?
But I've been doing Magnum PI. I've been in Hawaii.
That's beautiful.
And they have a lot of studios out there, and some couple of producer types out there were saying this would be a good situation to do like a very low budget single camera comedy in Hawaii.
Yeah.
We have all the resources. Right, because there's only two shows shooting out there right now.
Yeah,
but I want to do something like that.
It is
that.
Good. You know,
I want to do a show with you, Joe Coy, and a bunch of people just living in Hawaii.
That
you guys
would
all be homeless
let me
guys.
Tell you, yeah,
homeless Asians in Hawaii.
Oh, that's a funny
homeless
premise.
Asians.
Let me
in
tell
Hawaii.
You about New York. Let me tell you because in New York, that's what they were doing in the '90s. This is a true story. Oh. They were giving homeless people one way tickets to Hawaii. And shipping them out until finally the Hawaii.
Just to get out.
Finally, say, hey, brother, what is this? You smell that shit.
That's not what you knew. They were doing that, really?
Yeah, they were doing that, man, until they get caught.
That's the movie.
That's the movie. Or that's the TV show.
That's
or
the
movie.
Premise of the movie or TV
it.
Show we do. We get shipped.
Is it
out
what
there.
Era, though?
What,
in the 90s. That's
in the
funny.
90s?
We can fuck with the music.
No. You can just do it now. Homeless guys get shipped over to Hawaii. That's true.
Just
why not? Make it easier.
Yeah. But man, having it,
you know what they said about the homeless thing? Let me tell you about the homeless thing. Because like I was like, I don't know why I remember this, but like literally, I was like washing my doing my laundry someplace, and this guy was in there, and he was a youngish guy, like you could say late 30s, whatever, and he was a little frazzled, and he said, you know, I'm homeless, but I'm washing my clothes, I want to keep it together and everything, but I am homeless, and he didn't seem like too off, and you know, in this time when you meet somebody, you just feel, well, I want to. I've just been curious. And if anything, I'm still in show business. I'm curious about stuff. I like to read or learn something I don't know. I don't like to learn too much about what I don't know. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Like my wife says, I'll never finish a book, but I'll get kind of like, I'm good enough with that.
Yeah.
But like I said to him, so what's the hardest part? And he said, what? Being homeless. And it, you know what he answered?
What?
What would you think?
The hardest about being is being seen as a human being?
That's a good question. That's a really good answer. Good answer.
Thank you. What's your answer? Question.
Give me your answer. I would say just like probably loneliness. Just being, you know, yeah, probably loneliness.
What's your answer?
Or the nights.
That's a good one, babe.
Not having a home or a family to come to.
Those are all secondary answers. Mm. The rudimentary thing.
Oh, hang on. Showers.
Okay, well, you know, just the absolute necessity of, he said, when you're kind of life or death kind of situation, the immediacy, would you need immediately or just, and like he said, lack of sleep. That was the toughest thing because he's always afraid somebody's going to jump him, steal whatever shit he has. So he's like,
they can't sleep.
You know how hard it is for you to sleep.
I know, and I have a home.
Homes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll create like these casket looking things in the street.
Let me just hear me out, right? Pods. We call them pods.
They're pods.
So they get the caskets, so when they get killed, it's easier to bury.
No.
Hawaii?
They're not dead. They just look like it.
Okay.
And they basically, you charge what, $15 a night?
So well insulated.
Tokyo has those. They're casket hotels.
Oh, they are?
I don't think they call it casket hotels.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
it's a. They call it a pod. It's a fucking casket. Let's be honest. But you got the internet. You got a TV. You got a little place to sleep.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. When I first went to Japan, they realized like what we still don't over here in America is like space and how like you know how you can be more ingenious about using time, space, and what you have. And the Japanese would take like a regular suburban garage space. And go, we're going to stack 48 cars here.
That's so true.
Yeah. And how do they do it? Well, we're just going to have a system that's rotating.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Up like that. And they just build it.
Incredible.
And then they would never think about even doing that. Yeah. Remember when my dad, when he started to make a little bit of money when I was in my late teens and he's thinking about buying like a car lot in San Francisco. There's a car lot that's for sale, you know, but I was going to buy it with a couple other guys. But then I thought, you know, it's a cash business. I don't want either of you to. But I thought this way you can have a job, you know, on the weekends and like, you know, but I don't want you guys to get shot, so I didn't do it. My dad's always thinking, my dad was Jewish too, so he was always worried about, look, this is the thing I'm still dealing with, like in therapy now. Listen, when they come back, because the Nazis will come back in some form, when they come back and they come to the door, okay, what happens is if they come in the door, we all jump them.
They
can't kill us all. One of you go and get the gun that's next to the bed. Yeah. One of you will be able to get there. And I'm like, hey, I'm 8 over here. No, I'm serious. I was like, I remember I was 9.
Yeah.
I remember my brother crying about it.
Oh.
And like, he'd say, when are they coming? And I'm like,
he's 3 years older than, right?
Yeah. And I'd say, like, 2 years older. But he's like, they're not coming. Or like, I doubt, you know, I think we're going to be okay this generation for at least the next 20 years.
Yeah.
I turned out to be wrong, but they're coming to get us in social media. But yeah, so there was always, you know, it was that kind of thing. Like my dad, like, you know, never wanted to buy a German car, you know, because he was Jewish. He didn't want to, you know.
Yeah.
So, but then like, you kind of got to get over certain stuff. You have to like, you have to morally justify certain things in your life at a certain point. Like he wouldn't want to drive like a German car, but he bought one for my mom. You know, and he said like, yeah, they killed all my relatives, but man, that's a quiet ride. You know what I mean?
Great commercial.
So you have to justify.
Yeah, justify.
There's a commercial.
That's a commercial. Yeah, it's a real.
Yeah. So, but he didn't mind it for himself. But he got it for his wife. Said, yeah, it was used. Never bought a new car his entire life. He always got like secondhand car, good ones, but like never, you know, Lincoln Continental.
Yeah.
I threw it off a cliff on a movie, just as a respect.
You know. A lot of Filipinos claim to be related to you.
Yes,
is that a
you
thing?
Hear that? Okay, I'm not actually making this up.
Oh wow,
so I do.
I'm
have...
very entrenched in with the. I'm very deep with the Filipino community. I grew up there. I'm telling you, every third person I meet will claim to be related to you in some capacity.
I will tell you this. My family, the Astacio family from northern Philippines, from Baguio, which used to be the only place in the Philippines that snowed. And my uncle Os Hamada, who's a Japanese, Oscar Hamada, who's a Japanese Filipino, who was basically the only reason my family survived because he spoke Japanese and had a Hamada name and was able to saw what was happening, hid food, hid the girls, most importantly, up in the attic. And like, And that was one of the reasons that they survived. That's the northern Philippines, and up there they have different tribes and the different beautiful textiles and stuff. Yeah. One of the things that was known to the beautiful textiles, like you know, just the stuff. One of the things that they
don't
were known
say textiles again.
Okay,
because if you say it again,
you laugh.
I know, but if you say textiles again, I'm gonna freak the fuck out.
I just love certain stuff.
I like your smiling because your eyes crinkle, but don't do textiles.
So, but they also are known besides the beautiful the beautiful rugs and clothing that they make. And would make it that also put it around their shields, the different material. Mm. Textiles. They were also known for being headhunters.
Yeah.
And head shrinkers. Mm-hmm. Oh. So basically, if you got, they had good looking girls, it was more of a temperate, milder weather. They had great farmland. How do we keep other people from coming in? Well, it'd probably be helpful if we just let out the message, know that we're going to cut your fucking head off and we're going to shrink it. And then that, and they like would have like little heads,
the little
and
heads,
stuff. And it was very effective for very, very, very long time.
The shrunken heads.
I think
thing.
Up until
how hard is it to shrink a head?
It's pretty hard.
I don't think so.
I don't even think it's easy to scalp somebody.
I don't know about that, but I'm pretty sure I know how to cut a guy's head off.
I don't know if they really shrink it. I don't know if they make it like it's a. They take a monkey and make it look like it's a person or something. They
maybe.
But like even under Marcos, which is like the late 60s. Yeah. President Marcos, who is there, and a lovely Imelda, his wife. And I still think, I don't know, I think maybe she just passed away. She's still around. She's in her 90s.
She's still around.
Okay.
Yeah, Imelda hasn't died yet.
So even in the late 60s, they found, because Philippines is an archipelago, which is islands, a group of 4,000 islands.
Yeah, I've been there.
And they have,
I've been there. A bunch of times.
They have.
Yeah.
Have found like cavemen people.
Yeah, I know.
Who were in the late 60s. Like, can you imagine?
Wait.
Yeah.
Cavemen.
That's right.
What were they called? The
Filipinos.
Wait, the ones.
That's what they call Filipinos.
The Filipinos.
Yeah, yes.
They call cavemen Filipinos. Yeah, I forgot. I think the technical term is cavemen Filipino. Yeah. No, I forget what it's called.
Like in the Ifugao region, like in the mountainous areas?
It was mountainous,
no,
but also.
Alive or just the skull, like fossils?
No. Alive.
No, wait.
Oh, alive.
Stone Age tribal people were found.
In a cave.
Not in a cave, but I'm saying Stone Age tribal people that were isolated and never in society for 10,000 years, okay?
Wow.
And they were found in the late 60s, and they tried to acclimate them and put them into society, and they didn't do well. They committed suicide in a lot of
people. Of course.
So going back to what you're saying about every...
Tabon, T-A-B-O-N.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was in the 60s. Mm-hmm. 1967, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So anyway, going back to what you're saying, when my dad, martial law, I was there in 1972 when martial law was put in. Literally, there were tanks at the airport. And talking about it, it was a grass airport. And we had like a propeller plane. And that was the only time I saw my dad scared shitless. And there was tanks, and there was like, and we're literally, my relatives came to see me. My dad had the Super 8 footage of my relatives coming to say goodbye to me. And it was literally a pan that never stopped. In other words, my dad was panning the camera, going to people. And literally, like, it must have been. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but I'm going to say it was several hundred people.
Yeah.
So the Spaniards would take these badass Filipino warriors, because they had these, you know, the Eskrima sticks.
Yeah, Eskrima,
you know,
the Arnis. Yeah.
Well, those would be like, they would make those, but with like.
Blades
on
like commas, yeah.
That's
the
movie I would really like to see. You know how Indonesia has.
I can't even say it. I know what you're talking
about.
But
like Raid 2, Filipinos need to have an Arnis or Eskrima action movie.
I would love that.
Yeah. The Walk.
I wanted to make it about 10 years ago, and then I had a movie that bombed and didn't make a big stand. I did martial arts for 7 months and did that whole thing. And
oh, really?
Tore both my rotator cuffs. I broke my ankle
shit.
8 days. Because when you're starting to do martial arts and you're 42,
got the best combo?
No, I'm like, I got this. Ah, fuck!
Yeah.
And But I was the movie I wanted to do next after that, which is the straight on martial arts, just straight on. Because what they did was they sent out these warriors. They learned how to fight. This American guy, I'm forgetting his name now, learned that art of the close combat.
Yeah.
You know,
knife fighting or?
Yeah. And so they would send 12 guys out, and they would 12 guys would come back. They were unbeatable, these guys. And it was bloody awful.
I wish you would
combat.
Really look into Arnis or Eskrima. or any type of like weapons fighting from the Philippines.
We'll try to do that, yeah.
Or you know, like the butterfly knife?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's born in the Philippines.
Yeah. The butterfly
What's
knife?
What's that called? It's the balisal. Balisal, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's a beautiful knife. It's basically, it's got two little handles and it flips around like, you know, mm-hmm. And you see a guy who knows how to use that. I put that, we got that in the movie, so you're going to have to learn how to do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this is how they would take these badass little warriors, and that's what would guard the galleons, the Spanish galleons, and that's how they'd, some of them would drop off, and they'd stop in New Orleans, and some of them would stay there and go, fuck this. And that's how they ended up in New Orleans. That's how they ended up all over the world from this. And it was, but they, what they wanted, the Spaniards loved these guys because they would come in and like, anybody come near them, you're dead. And they actually changed boxing. This is true. Before, remember the old English, you ever see those old English boxing like this?
Yeah.
The British. Well, the Filipinos did this. It was this kind of thing. So after 1910, when the American army was in there, this fighting was different, except there were knives coming out. They looked like claws.
Ah.
That's what they do with the chickens back home. They put a little blade with a...
So this was the fight. This kind of fighting, the African-American guys who came back from that, there was this kind of fighting.
See, he says it too.
Kind of come, yeah.
I say African-American?
Yeah.
These guys make fun of me.
Dude, no,
they say black, right? And the thing is that I'm sorry, in my day, African American is what you said.
Yeah, if you call somebody black in the 60s, you get or African American, you get punched in the face.
Mm-hmm. In the 60s.
In the 60s, yeah.
When can you say African American then?
I think African American kind of came in late 70s, early 80s.
And then now you're not allowed to say it.
Now you're just gonna say, "What's up? How you doing? Everything good?"
Yeah.
I don't notice race. Nice to see you.
I always thought you were gonna be an asshole.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
honestly, when you're talking right now, in my head, I was like, I think this guy is a real cocksucker. In my head. Because I never met him. My avenue in show business, just we weren't
when
in the
did
same.
You meet?
Yeah, when was the first moment?
I saw him.
You know what?
I
do feel bad about this.
About what?
I want to hear.
No, I wanted you to be in one of the movies, but what happened was the studio at the time told me we got to hire this person from this country and this person from this country, and you were way funnier. You were way funnier than the guy that we hired. I'm sorry to say that. He's passed away now, and he's a nice guy, but like.
You don't have to say that.
No, you would have.
I don't even know what you're saying, but.
No, but I just remember.
Really nice, thank you. Really nice.
I just remember, like.
I'll tell you how I first met you at LAX.
Oh.
I saw him. It was like a Thursday. And I saw him. He was like walking on the phone. He was wearing one of those Sherlock Holmes hats he likes to wear.
Classic.
And in my head, I'm like, do you say something? Because I don't want to say anything and then have him be a dick. And then, like,
I know. Isn't that something that you think about, though?
It's so stupid.
Either people don't want them to be a dick or they do want them.
Right.
Because it's a better story.
Right.
Right.
But I went, you know what? No, I think he's not because I've heard of. So I said hi to you. And you were so nice. I felt guilty about all the negative thoughts I've had about him.
How did you build all those up?
I always build things when I don't know anybody. Like, I had that with even Jim Gaffigan.
It's a self-defense mechanism.
It's a defense, yeah.
Totally is. I feel that way. You know what it really is? I do think that that's part of the Asian thing, because my mother, the Asian heritage, about, like, you'll be disappointed or don't you have, you know, it's a kind of like, my mother used to tell me, Robert, when do you turn off?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm like, swear to God, I forgot about that for like so many years. When do you turn off? Turn off, Robert. And I went like, yeah, when do I turn off? So I just go through life thinking like I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
That's the thing with all my relationships with women have been affected by that. Because usually I have to like, I'm like this.
Yeah.
Because I'm waiting to get yelled at or in trouble or something. And what I realized is what's going to be my comedy special. It's just like, I'm thinking about naming it this because I'm trying to figure out I'm going to shoot in a couple months. But I realized I was raised by a 12-year-old girl.
Right.
I was raised by, emotionally, she was 12. I mean, God bless her. She's become almost a professor of education. She could have been. She was a master's degree. But like what happened was when anybody has real trauma, then something reminds them of that trauma or something, they get threatened by something, whether it's, you know, to control somebody or whatever, they're out of control, they go back to that trauma, mm-hmm. place of trauma. And so I was constantly brought back. She was constantly, I was, you know, confronted with this 12-year-old girl mentality.
Yeah.
Like, my sister's the one who told me that years ago. She said, you know, she's very immature. you know, yeah. when there's this thing, just to contain control, to keep control, to manipulate, to do whatever you need to do as a 12-year-old.
Yeah. The end of our thing, we do this. We do a thing called unhelpful advice. People ask questions, they're in trouble, and we try to either help them or not. It doesn't matter. Okay. So go ahead.
We protect ourselves.
Unhelpful advice with Bobby, Kalila, and Rob Schneider.
I just found out some really shocking information yesterday. My friend asked me what I knew about my boyfriend's dad. And I knew some gossip already. He's been arrested and he's an alcoholic. I assumed that's what I would hear. Then he proceeded to tell me that my boyfriend's dad fucked a guy our age who went to the same high school as us. His dad is married to my boyfriend's mom still, and they always are pretty homophobic. I literally have no fucking clue what to
do. Wait. Stop.
Who's fucking who?
Here.
So, the dad?
Yeah. The dad.
Kalila, you explain it to me.
Okay.
So have you been briefed on this beforehand?
No, I'm just...
She's translated
from Bobby. She's good.
See, we're comedians. I got like three things, and I'm like...
That's why people write them short now.
Go ahead. Yeah. Explain
so,
it to me.
Say for instance, we're in a relationship.
Yes.
You find out that my father is cheating on my mom with a young boy. But,
okay, I know this.
Yeah, but my parents are homophobic. But it turns out my dad is gay.
So the dad is gay, but he's outwardly homophobic.
My dad is homophobic, but it turns out he fucks young boys.
Okay, good.
That's he's also still married to my mom.
Okay.
So she wants to know: do I tell my boyfriend about
so
his dad?
You know this information, but I don't. Are you going to tell me what you know about my dad? You saw my dad fuck a boy.
Oh, yeah.
You tell me.
Oh, yeah. And I'd be like, this is how I'd say it, too. Yeah.
And that, and you should no longer, that guy should not be coaching Penn State either. That's all I got, folks. Yeah.
Wow. A Sandusky joke?
Coming out with the Sandusky.
Really? Yeah. That's nice. Thank you.
Every decade you get
Yeah, I would have it. I would do it because I just think that it's abhorrent, that behavior.
Well, let me just ask this then. What is information that you shouldn't divulge that you do know? Then what would be stuff like you don't
know? Oh, right.
Like, Kalila, what would you feel would something that you would find that you would know that maybe you shouldn't say, you shouldn't divulge because it's not helpful? Like, for instance,
if
I will tell you this, like, I knew a very, very talented, oncologist, this doctor at up in Northern California. I shouldn't narrow it down.
Yeah.
And his wife was cheating on him, and we knew for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not saying nothing.
Yeah.
Mm. My brother did, like an idiot. And like that was it. He never spoke to him again.
I did that one time in my life, and it backfired so horribly. And he was able to convince her that he hadn't cheated anyways, and now I look like the homewrecker. So
are they still together?
Yeah.
Wow.
With kids, two kids now.
Wow.
I tried to tell her what he had done.
Is that a low self-esteem thing? What does somebody stay in a relationship like that?
I don't know. I think that she really believes that I was trying to somehow...
I think there's something where there's like, you have a dominant person, and then there's somebody who just refuses to ever become dominant.
Yeah.
And just accepts that role. And they live common lies. And those lies continue to go, and the other person's okay with it.
There are two types of people. I think
there's
either a high tall, but you know, I an ex of mine, he is such a tolerant person that he just doesn't want to engage in any type of like difficulties. That
so you mean he avoids conflict?
Yeah, I think Asians do that a lot too. Like,
you know what? You're right.
We just kind of put it, you know, brush it under the rug, and kind of, you know, hope nothing seeps out.
Well, it's out of politeness.
Yeah, it's politeness.
It's a weird kind of politeness to avoid. I mean, it's the same thing.
I just don't like
when you pressure me to say, would I lie for you if you're murdering people? And I go, yeah, sure, if you want me to.
No, yeah, yeah.
But I do think like it's an avoidance of confrontation. But what is that? What's the root to that though? As I do think, and I'll tell you what I really, really feel it is, is I do feel like it's the same reason the Philippines haven't changed their name from King Philip yet.
Yeah.
It's like they're long suffering. They're so polite to the point that they just suffer.
But there also is an identity to that suffering that I think is detrimental because it turns into that colonial mentality of being always at the mercy of the white man.
And I totally agree.
Yeah.
And that's what the Philippines is in dire need of change. Like
that's why the corrupt administration to corrupt administration to corrupt administration.
Another one. Give us another one.
Yeah.
Another one?
That's I'm gonna say that's a fake one.
It's a fake one. Give us another one.
This is one, help a guy out here. So I'm going to go right into this because I'm straightforward and hate beating around the bush. My girlfriend and I used to enjoy having intercourse, and we did it almost every day. But we've been together for 3 years now, and I've gained some weight during that time. Now I feel things have changed, and I feel like she's grossed out about me because of my weight. She gives me a lot of excuses when it comes to the mood. How should I approach the situation?
LA Fitness.
Boom.
That's a guy, like, you ever work on a movie and like, you see, like, you're standing, gain, like, I had to stand and gain 25 pounds in 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe it was 2.5 months.
Yeah.
He gained 25. I remember looking, poof, poof, and then by the end of the movie, what the f? You're my stand-in. And he it was just depression or something.
Now, you have a podcast with your wife, right?
Yes.
What's it called?
See What Happens, which is very, very, a common thing that my mother yelled at me. I think a lot of Filipinos. Your mother, yeah. See what happens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're running around the house. See what happens? You fell. You hurt yourself. See what happens? You broke that. See what happens? Huh? You're crying. See what happens? It's like, I remember when I was a little kid. There's a, you know, we're three miles away from the house. Somebody twisted an ankle. All of a sudden, you're see what happens? A bit. What are you saying? I'm sorry.
No, but you guys do it every week.
Yeah.
I'm trying to plug it because I want people to listen.
We're every week. See what happens. The podcast. We did it on our own.
Yeah, Rob.
We'd love to join a company.
Rob, honestly.
Yeah, should I? What should I do? I don't know what to do.
What do you mean?
I mean, what should I do with the podcast?
Doing it.
First of all, the key is to constantly do it every week.
Just we've done it every week.
Good.
For like 4 months now.
For four months, right? You're releasing it every week, correct?
Yeah.
Where on?
Just Apple and Spotify.
Yeah.
This is the big stuff,
If you have any questions, ask this fucking guy. He's my guy.
Okay.
He has all the answers.
All right, we're done.
We're not. Right. Well, I wanted to say, though, like, you're, like, I think the last of that group of Asians that I wanted to get. Because I've had Margaret, you know what I mean? And
Remember when she first started stand-up in San Francisco.
Really?
She was a young girl, like 18 or 19.
And how old are you then?
I was about 20. I was older. I was 22.
God.
And then she was living in the Richmond at that time. And one time, and she's lovely, but she was like, she came and performed, and I went like, let me write some jokes for you. Let me just take the premises that you have. Perform jokes. So we went to the coffee shop across the street and just, you know, wrote some jokes for like 5 minutes. And just
whoa.
Like, you know, this would get to the joke, to this and that. Like, she literally, she wanted to do it and express herself, but she just didn't know the form. And she didn't have that upbringing of like, well, what I had or what you probably had were comedy albums.
Yeah.
And like, you know, your parents, had, like your dad would laugh at jokes and see TV things. I don't think she had that. I think her parents were real, like, you know, just, you know, right off of the
I think I had the same thing as she had. I didn't have anything.
Really?
Yeah, my parents were. They didn't speak English.
Wow. So how? What was your entree to the comedic?
Well, my parents made money, so they have HBO, right? And so back in the day, I would watch all those like young comedians, right?
Yeah.
The young comedians ones, and I would watch the Tonight Show or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we had access to Blockbuster. They would have some specials out, so I would watch all the prior ones.
But how did you make the leap? Did you know somebody who's also wanted to do comedy? Did you have a buddy who wanted to do it? Or
I was in AA, and I was sharing at an AA meeting, so I was maybe 22 at the time. I had maybe 5 years of sobriety at the time. I was at a place called North Park Men's. It's a men's meeting, probably 400 men. I went up and shared, and every time I would speak, I would destroy. But I wouldn't purposely want to get laughs.
Yeah.
Every time I would tell people, just laugh. I would explain my day. I can't believe, you know, I would just out there and people would die laughing. And this old man came up to me, and he goes, "Let me talk to you." And so he talked outside, and he goes, "You should do stand up." And I go, "I don't know. I don't even know how to do that." You should just do it.
Did you ever find yourself going down to a meeting knowing you were going to kill that night? You did, didn't you?
Did it incentivize you to go to more meetings?
Affirmation.
Yeah, you would have gone whether that guy told you or not you were going
to
go to that club.
I do a thing still today from those early days. It's like I drop something once. Because you have these timers when you're speaking, especially when you're back in the day.
Yeah.
When I'm the 10-minute speaker, so you have to do it because the main speaker does 30 minutes. But at one time, I dropped the watch off the thing, and I picked it back up. And when I picked it back, and I said, as I came back up, I went, "I'm back." he got a huge laugh. Yeah. Right? So.
Well,
right?
Can you imagine? Because, like, none of those guys are being funny.
Right.
Everybody's lives are falling apart. Everybody can't get it together. Yeah.
And then
everybody,
I'm back.
Right.
Everybody's a repeat.
But now.
Loser. And, you know, everybody's. No. But
now every six.
Everybody's losing it and everybody trying to keep it together. And, like, they got entertainment for free. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
World
but now every 6 months now when I speak, I'm doing this. Right? Trying to get that laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm now, as now when I'm speaking, I know how I have a stand-up act in my AA because you can't just do jokes. You have to disguise it to put it in the language of being more real.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
Right? So you
were able to manipulate and figure that out.
Right.
But did you ever think like that stand-up and that laughter was just another addiction for you?
It is one. And I don't think it's healthy. And I think that...
I don't think it's healthy. Why don't you think it's healthy? I don't think it's healthy.
Oh my
either.
God, that's a great movie. What? Somebody who just goes to AA meetings to so get movies. That kind of like validation.
Well, that's what they did. That Fight Club did that.
Or to get, to get laid in the sex addicts addiction thing.
Right.
I'm sure somebody's done some lousy movie about that. Yeah. I'm surprised I haven't.
No. I love doing your show, dude.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate you doing it because I know you're getting some shit from somebody telling you not to do it.
Rob,
you gonna cut this part out?
No. Who said that? I don't remember who said that.
No, your agent.
Oh, that's right. Mm.
But that's okay.
But
you know
I did
what, though?
It anyway.
Here's why I hate agents.
Okay.
Because I felt like most of the jobs I got were for myself, you know, by myself. And then like when I didn't, when I got these jobs myself, I gave them money, and like they would not get off. They wouldn't answer the phone or avoid me. Like when you're not hot, and all of a sudden they get to go. So I don't know. I also have this, you know. I had this thing about authority and like those agents kind of represented that to me. And like, I remember the first time I ever got a TV show, I went like, I was psyched. I did the pilot, you know, and I was like, oh man, I'm psyched. You know, this is after Saturday Night Live and I got some show on NBC. And then the agent at the time, Marty Lisek, he was,
I know Marty.
He was drunk. And he said to me, hey, man, this is amazing. It's the most incredible to get a package. It's incredible. And man, I said, what's a package? Silence. He sobers up. Well, no, it's a, you know, you don't, and he says to me this, you don't have to pay me a commission.
Right.
What do you mean I don't have to pay a commission? Yeah, you don't. Well, how do you make money? Silence. Well, you own a piece of the show. Well, what if that ends up being more than the 10% I would have paid you?
Right.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what if the show doesn't go? And they said, well, yeah, but what if it does? What if you end up, if you own a piece of the show forever, then like that can end up being more. How come you didn't mention that to me before?
Wow, Silence. You bring that shit up?
Yeah.
I don't say it.
No, but
I see it on the paper. I know it's happening.
After that.
And I just smile and go, no, I'm happy to be here.
No, like after that, I fucking hated agents. And I know it's not okay. You can't blame everybody for that kind of thing. But like, I just felt taken advantage of, you know?
Do you have an agent now?
No.
Manager now?
Yeah.
Okay. Who?
I feel like I'm being taken advantage of by a manager. No. Lee Kernis.
I love Lee.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Brillstein, right?
Yeah.
I love. You
know, he's an old guy, and I'd rather would have an older guy.
Will you
guy.
Tell Lee, I'm being real.
Yeah.
And he knows me well. He does. Ask him. Tell him I said hi.
I will.
I love
talk
that
to him
guy.
Tomorrow.
I have a show to do, so I got to get the fuck out of here.
We got to do part two of this thing.
No, we're going to do this forever. Are you never mind?
It's pretty good.
We could do it forever, you and I. And also, dude, all that stuff, that little honest stuff, with you, that's the kind of stuff that I like listening to anyway.
Oh, good. I mean, I'm more comfortable talking about it now.
I want to know more about you.
Well, the thing about the 12-year-old girl things and the 12-year-old girl and like how that came back and how I never really realized until it really, to where it happened, where it was at the very end after my... my father passed away is when it flashed to me, right? And I'm going to do on like my
ooh,
live
cliffhanger.
Show. Yeah. We'll talk about it. But get to where are you going? The Comedy Store?
Yeah.
Of course you are.
But let's skip. Listen, Rob.
Yeah. See what happens.
Go to his Instagram and his Twitter. What is it? Rob Schneider?
I think it's Rob Schneider.
His handle, right?
It's Rob Schneider.
Right.
Rob Schneider.
I want to say this right now. If you're at any city and Rob's playing your city, you're not a Tiger Belly fan if you don't go see him.
Thank you.
He is so funny. Nicest guy. Go say hi to him.
We have fun.
He's the best. You're going to be back on Tiger Belly as many times as you want.
You know what we should do next time? Because I'm totally like a scatterbrained idiot. We'll just focus on one thing the whole time.
No,
Philippines war.
I like your
encyclopedia.
Yeah,
your
encyclopedia.
I love it.
I like it.
Okay. Give him a round of applause, everybody. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Once again, that his handle is I am Rob Schneider. So make sure you follow him there.
Okay, great.
Sure. Show appreciation to our delightful sponsors for keeping the lights on here at Tiger Belly. Thank you, Postmates, Ridge Wallet, MindBookie, and ExpressVPN. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the Postmates app and use the code Belly. Get 10% off your front carry wall today by going to ridge.com/slap. That's ridge.com/slap. Use the code SLAP. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code Belly, mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months of free at expressvpn.com/belly. And make sure you see Bobby's shows. You can go to bobbyleelive.com. He has shows in San Antonio, Arlington, Brea, San Francisco, San Diego, all sorts of places. Make sure you see the Slept King live. And once again, you can send us questions to adviceonhelpful@gmail.com. I'm Gilbert. You can follow me at Gilbert's Kalila Clamity K, Bobby at Bobby Lee Live, and George Kimmel at George_Kimmel. Have a good night. Oh, also, guys, make sure you buy our shirts. While they take the picture, look at this photo. This too.